Dr. William Luther Pierce, 2001. Send them all back.
Hello. A friend in New York has sent me a collection of New York newspapers with stories about the September 11th attack on the World Trade Center. I've scanned at least 20 issues of the New York Times, the New York Post, and the Daily News from the past 6 weeks. I wasn't paying much attention to the repetitious stories about how many thousands of tons of rubble had been removed or how many bodies had been recovered. Instead, I was trying just to capture the flavor of the party line being fed to the public by the media in New York, which is pretty much the same flavor as that of the party line being fed to the rest of the country, except perhaps a little stronger. There are several components of this flavor, but the strongest is the intense, almost maniacal hostility directed against anyone who questions the assertion by the media and the government that the September 11th attack was based solely on the hatred that fundamentalist Muslims, especially Osama bin Laden and his followers, supposedly have for America's freedom and democracy. Fundamentalist Muslims, according to the Bush government's party line, believe in a theocratic society of the sort established in Afghanistan by the Taliban. Since America doesn't have such a society, they hate us, and that's why they attacked us. And it's the only reason. And don't you even dare to think that there might be some other reason for the attack. If you even hint at another reason, then you're a dirty, lying, criminal anti-Semite, and you're probably in league with the terrorists. Really, the response of the media to a suggestion by anyone that the U.S. government's support of Israel's aggression against its neighbors might have been even partly responsible for the attack is a hysterical outpouring of scorn and hatred against the heretic. I have never been to Afghanistan and don't know how the Taliban responds to critics, but the government over there hardly could be more intolerant toward dissenters than the media here are in this matter of questioning the reason for the September 11th attack. Here's an example. The whole front page of the October 12th issue of New York's Daily News is taken up by a photograph of Saudi Arabia's Prince Al-Walid bin Talal viewing the wreckage of the World Trade Center just after he has given a personal check for $10 million to New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani to be used in the recovery effort. Under the prince's photo, in a huge headline, are the words, "Shove it." Not a very nice way to thank someone who has just donated $10 million to the city. Not even a nice thing to say in polite society. Why the newspaper's hatred for the prince, who is one of the world's wealthiest men? Is it because he is an Arab, and the newspaper's editor believes he may have some link to Osama bin Laden? No, it could hardly be that. The editor understands that the fundamentalist Muslims hate people like the Saudi prince, whom they consider a traitor. What caused the nasty headline was a comment the prince made as he was touring the wreckage of the World Trade Center. After denouncing Osama bin Laden and calling the attack a tremendous crime, the prince said, and I quote, "I came here to show my allegiance to New York. We are here to tell America and to tell New York that Saudi Arabia is with the United States wholeheartedly." End of quote. That sounds kosher enough to please any media boss, doesn't it? But then a minute later the prince said, and again I quote, "At times like this one, we must address some of the issues that led to such a criminal attack. I believe the government of the United States of America should re-examine its policies in the Middle East and adopt a more balanced stance toward the Palestinian cause. Our Palestinian brethren continue to be slaughtered at the hands of Israelis while the world turns the other cheek. End of quote. Oh boy, that really blew it. After all of his public groveling, and after his gift of $10 million to the city, the prince dared to suggest that U.S. support for Israel's aggressive behavior in the Middle East might have had something to do with the attack. He had violated the taboo. He had deviated from the party line. He had spoken the unspeakable. Thus, the scornful and insulting headline telling the prince to take his $10 million gift and shove it on the front page of the Daily News. And Mayor Giuliani, as soon as he was told of the prince's words, angrily ordered an aide to return the prince's $10 million check and announced that the city would not accept the prince's tainted money. Commentary about the prince in other New York newspapers was just as nasty as that in the Daily News. Columnists and editorial writers expressed not just disapproval of the prince's statement, they were hysterical with hatred and rage. Well, that's New York. Rudolph Giuliani always has kept his nose well up under the Jews' coattails. That's how he became mayor. And I suppose one shouldn't be surprised by the headline on the front page of the Daily News, which is owned by New York Jewish real estate developer Mortimer Zuckerman. What's really interesting is that virtually all of the other mainstream media around the country, and all the other politicians as well, echo the same party line. And the Gentile editors and columnists and politicians are, with a few exceptions, as vicious and hateful as the Jews themselves in attacking anyone who questions the party line that U.S. support for Israel had nothing at all to do with the events of September 11th. Two journalists in Oneida, New York, in an essentially Gentile area of the state, more than 250 miles from Giuliani's turf, didn't toe the party line closely enough and learned to their sorrow what happens to those naive enough to believe in freedom of the press. Last Wednesday, Gene Ryan, managing editor of the Oneida Daily Dispatch, and Dale Seth, the paper's city editor, were fired by the paper's publisher because they ran an editorial that quoted a Pakistani who pointed out that the State of Israel was founded on terrorism and that throughout the Middle East, Israelis were looked on as the region's preeminent terrorists. Furious Jews demanded the heads of the two editors and the publisher, in order to avoid an advertising boycott, gave them up. It is not too much to say that the Jews and their camp followers in the media and the government become hysterical whenever the question of responsibility for the September 11th attack is raised. They refuse to discuss or debate the matter. They just begin shrieking and spitting. On the part of Jews, I guess that is understandable. It is crystal clear that the principal reason for the attack was the U.S. government's support for Israel's atrocious behavior in the Middle East against the Palestinians and others. No rational person doubts that, and Osama bin Laden himself acknowledged it in public statements. The Jews are terrified that if they permit the matter to be debated in public, then even the lemmings, which is to say the voters, may begin to see the light. And if the voters ever figure out what is going on, then many politicians may rebel against Jewish control and cut off U.S. support for Israel. And that would mean a quick demise for the Jewish state. Without U.S. weapons and U.S. money, Israel cannot survive. Thus, the hysterical shrieking and name-calling whenever anyone links U.S. foreign policy to the September 11th attack. The aim is to keep a lid on the subject by keeping everyone intimidated keeping everyone afraid of being denounced as an anti-Semite or a sympathizer with terrorism if he fails to toe the party line. You know, terrorism is real. It's not just an invention by the media. It's something we actually must learn to cope with in the sort of world this government of ours has made for us with its criminally irresponsible policies. But both the media and the government are badly misusing the term, much in the way they misuse such terms as racism. For example, when one of Ariel Sharon's cabinet thugs, Rehavam Zeebi, was assassinated last week by the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, George Bush referred to it as an act of terrorism, a term he would not have dreamed of using to refer to any of Israel's numerous assassinations of Palestinian leaders. Zeebi, by the way, was a close associate of Jewish mobsters involved in Israel's international trade in white slaves. His friends and political allies operated the sex slave rings which kidnapped young Russian and Ukrainian women in the lands pauperized by Jewish communism and bring them to Israel, where they are forced to work as sex slaves for the enrichment of their Jewish pimps. Killing Zeebi was more like flushing a toilet than an act of terrorism. The Jews have even called me a terrorist, and the corrupt government in Washington has gone along with this name-calling. The fact is that I have never been involved in any criminal activity whatsoever, much less terrorism, nor have I ever urged others to engage in terrorism. And yet, listen to what this government report, published by the government's Centers for Disease Control, says about me. Under the general heading, Emerging Infectious Diseases, on the CDC's website, is a report written by a Jewess, Jessica Stern, identified in her own report as a member of the notorious Council on Foreign Relations. In her report, titled The Prospect of Domestic Bioterrorism, she writes, and I quote, "Politically motivated terrorists who desire to change societies rather than destroy them might avoid killing very large numbers of people because the political costs would exceed the benefits. Some terrorists, however, want to annihilate their enemies or demolish the societal order. William Pierce, leader of the neo-Nazi organization National Alliance, aims to initiate a worldwide race war and establish an Aryan state." End of quote. She certainly makes it sound like I am one of those some terrorists she mentions in the sentence just before the one in which she names me. That Centers for Disease Control report is currently on the CDC's website at cdc.gov. Now, one expects this sort of name-calling and deception from the Jews, and one expects it from the news media under their control. But it becomes a more worrisome matter when the Jews are able to use the government as a willing tool to propagate their lies and help them in their deception of the American public. Just as George Bush will knowingly repeat any lie they tell him to repeat, the Jews are able to use a government agency, such as the Centers for Disease Control, an agency charged with protecting the public health, to discredit as a terrorist any law-abiding citizen who exposes their lies or otherwise displeases them. If they can do it to me, they can do it to you or to anyone else who annoys them. And if you believe that there's anyone in this terminally corrupt government we have in Washington who even cares about the way in which the Jews misuse the U.S. government for their own purposes, you are sadly mistaken. Tell them about it, and they will just smirk at you and lie the way George Bush smirks and lies. The civil servants who cared were weeded out of the bureaucracy long ago. The last honest elected official threw in the towel at about the same time. And if you suggest that I sue the Jewess who wrote the report calling me a terrorist, or the Council on Foreign Relations, to which she belongs, or the Centers for Disease Control, which published the report, for libel, then you don't understand how the legal system in this country has been subverted. Well, back to the party line and all of those New York newspapers I've been reading. One cornerstone of the party line is to prevent any public discussion of the real reason for the September 11th attack. Another cornerstone is to flip the lemmings up into a war hysteria so that they will go along with a prolonged war in the Middle East on behalf of Israel. To this end, the newspapers are full of stories and pictures designed to warm the hearts and stir the blood of the Joe Sixpacks and the Sally Soccer Moms of the nation. Pictures of school children waving flags and singing the Star Spangled Banner. Speeches about unity and all Americans pulling together, regardless of race or creed, to fight terrorism. And the photos of the proud-to-be-an-American types displaying their flags and holding their hands over their hearts are all appropriately multicultural, with blacks, mestizos, and Asians mixed in with the whites. The columnists and the cartoonists in all of the New York papers are singing in tune with the editors and reporters. The columns are full of folksy anecdotes designed to get everyone into a flag-waving mood. A column in the September 24th New York Post quoted a woman at a rally against terrorism in Yankee Stadium. Quote, "They sought to divide us," she said, "but instead they united us as never before." I quote columnist Steve Dunleavy, "Throughout Yankee Stadium on a Sunday blessed with sunshine, you almost felt like you could touch the emotion in the air with your finger. Every color, every creed, every race, every religion together." End quote. And Dunleavy talks about the tears on people's faces as they sing the old songs designed to build patriotism during the First and Second World Wars. And let me tell you, for most Americans, this is powerful stuff. People who have been alienated by the unnaturalness of multiculturalism and modern urban life long for a feeling of togetherness, of solidarity, of purpose and mission. They want to feel strong and proud again instead of impotent and empty and guilty for being white. Even people who ought to know better get swept up in this feeling. And after they got the lemmings feeling strong and proud again, the media tell them whom to hate, whom to direct their righteous wrath against. First, there are the internal enemies to be hated, and then there are the external enemies. The internal enemies are those who aren't marching in lockstep with everyone else, those who aren't singing loudly enough, those who question the wisdom of rushing off to a major war against all of the Jews' enemies in the Middle East, those who seek to damage our wonderful feeling of unity, to divide us by asking about the causes of the September 11th attack. Special scorn is directed at the dissenters on America's university campuses and at citizens who express concern about the Bill of Rights being trampled by those eager to wage war and to keep everyone else in line. The neoconservative Jew, William Crystal, has a newspaper filled with such scorn. It's called the Weekly Standard, and its columns and editorials are prominently reproduced in the New York papers I scanned. As for the external enemies, well, of course, there's Osama bin Laden. But the hatred and wrath of the aroused lemmings are being directed far wider than that. a cartoon in the same issue of the New York Post I cited a minute ago features a garbage barrel with rats being dropped into it. The barrel is labeled Barrel of Vermin. One of the rats is labeled Taliban. Another is labeled Iraq. And a third is labeled Iran. Not Iraqi terrorists or Iranian terrorists, just Iraq and Iran, the whole countries, the two Middle Eastern nations most feared by Israel, but which, so far as we know, had nothing to do with the September 11th attack. The cartoon appears right above a William Crystal column beating the drums for a general war and disparaging pacifists. The message of the cartoon is clear. They all wear towels on their heads. They're all vermin. Let's kill them all. That message doesn't exactly jibe with the Bush government's campaign to build a coalition of so-called moderate Muslim states. But the general tenor of the propaganda in the New York papers is that we shouldn't be splitting hairs now. We should hug the nearest non-white who doesn't have a towel on his head, sing the Star Spangled Banner with him, and then go marching off to war together. Just to avoid any misunderstanding, I'll say again now what I've said before. I have no real fondness for anyone in the Middle East. I do not believe that Middle Easterners, Arabs or Jews, especially Jews, should be permitted to live in America or in Europe. I have no sympathy for Islam or any other Semitic religion from the Middle East. But I do not believe that we need to go to war against Iraq or Iran or even Afghanistan in order to protect Americans from terrorism or to protect any other American interests. And I strenuously object to going to war against anyone to protect Israel's interests. If we really have proof that Osama bin Laden organized the September 11th attack, then let's punish him without waging war against another country. Confiscate Osama bin Laden's assets wherever they can be found. Expel all Middle Easterners from the United States so that he has no followers left here to mail anthrax-infected letters around the country. And send a team of CIA assassins into Afghanistan to find him. But quit waging war on other countries or trying to install puppet governments in other countries for the sake of Israel. And after Osama bin Laden has been terminated, let's go after the people who are really responsible for the September 11th attacks. And you know who those people are. They are the politicians in Washington who have been putting the interests of one particular tribe of Middle Easterners ahead of American interests for the past 50 years. The members of that particular Middle Eastern tribe don't wear towels on their heads. They wear little round caps called yarmulkes, and they've done infinitely more damage to our people than a towel heads ever dreamed of doing. The politicians in Washington serve this tribe because the members of the tribe have gained control of nearly all of the mass media of news and entertainment in America, and through this control are able to manipulate the American political process. This tribe was not satisfied with the wealth and power it acquired in America, however. Always remembering its Middle Eastern roots, it lusted for control of the Middle East too. And with the support of the American government it had corrupted, it began seizing land in the Middle East, killing or pushing aside the indigenous Muslim peoples. Every U.S. president, from Harry Truman through George W. Bush, even Richard Nixon, whom they forced from office, served them, helping them brutalize and kill their neighbors and expand their power in the Middle East. And every U.S. Congress during the past half century has taken orders from them as well. And every U.S. president and member of Congress who served them understood that in supporting this tribe, in supporting Israel, he was damaging the interests of the American people and generating hatred against America. Hatred of which we all saw an expression on September 11th. So let's punish Osama bin Laden for killing all of those innocent Americans, but then let's go after the real criminals, the traitors in Washington, who really are the ones responsible for the September 11th attack. And then let's send all of the Middle Easterners, including those now controlling Hollywood and Madison Avenue and our television networks and the rest of our news and entertainment media, back to the Middle East for good. Thanks for being with me again today.